All right, great to have you back with us. Bruce Jenkins, how are you today?
Good, Marty. How are you?
Very good. Looking forward to the game. But a couple of things have happened, of course, in sports, and I want to talk to you about it. One, you have a tremendous column online that I just saw about Bill Russell, the great Boston Celtic from McClyman's High School, Oakland. Passed away today at 88, Bruce, and you really wrote a beautiful story about him. Let's talk about Bill Russell.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Marty. He was by far my favorite athlete. I never got a chance to cover him, but just to follow in all of sports from the time I was a kid, really. The first really impressions that were made on me outside of Los Angeles were watching the Boston Celtics play when they had Bob Cousy and Bill Russell just on the scene. It was, you know, black and white grainy stuff against the St. Louis Hawks. You really only could see the finals, but Cousy was the first thing that caught my eye. But as I started following the Celtics, not because they were winning, but because the way they played, they were so selfless. And I've always been a sucker for teamwork. And, of course, they kept winning and winning. And then I realized before long that Russell was really the reason. Just doing things without having a particularly good shooting touch or dribbling ability, but a phenomenal athlete. And as he said one time, I think he was talking to Jack McCallum, he goes, "I determined how the game was going to be played. It was going to be played my way." He did it very matter-of-factly said that, but it wasn't boasting because that's what he did. He controlled it with his mind. And he said the only players he could think of comparatively were Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Michael Jordan, who just could exert their will over a game. But the difference with Russell is that he did it defensively. He did it under the basket, sometimes doing nothing just because he was there, because he could do something. And then when it came time to actually do something, he never let you down. You know, there's so much to his game that was really has never been seen since. And the winning is just astounding. I mean, he was in 21 winner-take-all games in his career, Marty, and he went 21-0. So I kind of stopped there. Yeah.
Wow. And a big part of Oakland history, his father coming from Louisiana, and Howard Bryant did this beautifully in the book Ricky, explaining the migration to Oakland in the 40s.
Yeah.
And he was a part of it in McClyman's High School and eventually got to the Celtics, as you say, played with Paul Silas, among others. But
he didn't play with he was before Paul Silas got to the Celtics.
Was he?
But yeah.
Okay.
So Silas was part of the Cowens, John Havlicek, JoJo White teams.
Got it. Okay. All right. You know more basketball than I do. I kept thinking of Silas. All right. But the point on Russell, he was a leader in the community, and he was part of the Bay Area, and to me that was very important.
Well, yeah, he always was one to speak out against racial injustice. He experienced, God knows, a lot of it in Boston from fans' hostility, even in his private life, invading his home and doing something I wouldn't even mention. And he was extremely resentful of these things and you know, spoke out against them in a very eloquent and classy manner. And it's made him a little bit hard to reach sometimes, but he had his principles, and they always stood for the right thing. And definitely one of Oakland's great. It's a great tribute from Harry Edwards today, speaking about how Russell was he was a peerless individual, not just as an athlete, but when you combine what he did on the floor and what he did off the floor, it's pretty hard to find a comparison to Bill Russell. And I got to credit the great Raymond Ritter, the Warriors PR guy. He's known for years that Russell was my guy. And about, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago, he set up, before a game, Russell was in town, he set up he put us in a room. It was Jerry West, Al Attles, Jim Barnett, Bill Russell, and me. Just listening to them reminisce. And I had the tape going. I mean, you know, it's something I'll never forget. And we actually had a real connection with Bill Russell. That was pretty special.
Well, I'm glad we could touch on that. But great column, Bruce. It's online, and I'm sure it'll be in the Chronicle for everybody to read. Do not miss this one. Well, Will Clark yesterday, and like Bill Russell, a leader, Bill, and the Will Clark thing for me, he was a leader. And he got up there and made a speech. It was very inspiring. We could trust him. We could look at him. And it was a real leader making a tremendous speech. I thought it was one of the best I've heard anywhere, really.
Oh, absolutely. What a speech. Jeez. And what a finish. The big finish, you know. I thought Kruko set him up beautifully. That's one of the greatest tributes I've ever heard at a ceremony, what Kruko did from up in the booth because he couldn't get down to the field. But yeah, Will Clark, yeah. I mean, you talk about two different kinds of leaders, you know, between Bill Russell and Will Clark. Will was so blustery, and he seemed like kind of a bumpkin at times. And he really was in a lot of ways. But what he did on the field, it was so commanding and so just overriding everything. You were just gravitated to what he was doing for you because he never, ever lost confidence. He never disrespected the game. He never took a play off. He was always Will Clark, and he was a winner. And in that sense, whatever kind of person you happen to be, if you have that quality, it really rubs off. You know, Thurman Munson had that quality. Again, he couldn't be more different than Will Clark, but he had that. And you know it when you see it.
Well, inspiring. That's the way I'll put it. The speech was inspiring, and I really enjoyed it. And I think for the ball club, I mean, Bruce, to see that number up there in between Monty Irvin and Willie Mays and Mel Ott's up there and Bill Terry and Marichal and Barry Bonds, that's pretty special when you really get down to it that 22 is up there.
Yeah, I love how selected the Giants have been about that because it's just, you know, there's a lot of tremendous players have come through. I mean, Tim Lincecum isn't up there, or there's so many players aren't up there. But and they relaxed their rules a little bit. Previously, you had to be in the Hall of Fame, but you know they had to relax it for Bonds and for Will Clark and it's just, you know, there aren't any ringers up there, that's for sure.
No, Carl Hubbell and God,
yeah,
just
come on,
up and down the list. So, all right, a special day at the ballpark. Will Clark did not miss his pitch. He hit it hard, and I really enjoyed it. And, of course, Bill Russell today passing. Two good leaders, as you said, Bruce, in different ways, but two real leaders in their sports, and I think for society as well. Well, what do we do with Carlos Rodon? He goes today. The trading deadline is Tuesday. The Giants are 50-51. What does Farhan do, Bruce?
Well, I certainly don't know. I don't have any insight. He could go either way, really. I kind of agree with John Shea writing today that they're going to be sellers. I think, you know, they're four games out of the wild card. The Phillies and Cardinals are both winning big right now. Just to get to that number six slot in the playoffs is a bit of a long shot, especially if you've watched the team. There's no reason to think that this team is going to do anything. It really isn't. Except, you know, when Rodon and Webb are spinning their magic and it's 1-1 in the sixth, you know. I mean, so I think, to offer Rodon is a pretty attractive way to go because he's all but gone. Nobody's expecting him to be with the team next year. I wouldn't say he's any kind of a leader the way he acted in the dugout the other day. I mean, he seems kind of oblivious sometimes. But, you know, a tremendous pitcher who could make an astounding difference for a team, even if you're just renting him for the rest of the season and you lose him. If you're in the hunt and all of a sudden you toss him in there, capable of throwing, you know, a two-hitter, I heard if you with 13 strikeouts, his stuff is phenomenal. So, I mean, that's a great piece. That's the best piece they have, assuming they don't trade Webb, and I don't think they would even offer him. But, you know, they need a lot of things. Obviously, Soto would be great. I've never thought they'd be in that. They don't have enough, and I just can't picture it. But, you know, they need a center fielder. They need a defense. They need help in the outfield defensively. They need help defensively in the infield. And they need relief pitching. And they can get these things.
Yeah, they need a lot. And I guess that's the point. St. Louis is in the middle of everything for Soto. And also they're looking for pitching. Rodon would fit there. And the Cardinals have a good farm system, and they have some major league players. Maybe that O'Neill would fit for the Giants. But I agree with you. I agree with John. I said it yesterday. There's no doubt in my mind that he has to go because he will not be here next year. And if this club is going to get in the playoffs, a lot of other people, 24 other people, are going to have to really get hot and play great baseball. Even if he's here, there's no guarantee that they'll get into the playoffs. It's the rest of the team that matters. And if they could get in without him, if they all play.
They could.
Yeah, if they all play well.
Yeah.
So that's my feeling on that. It'll be pretty exciting. And this will define Farhan a little bit, too. You know, as you said, Bruce, the farm system, today they had to make a deal. It was really scary with Estrada getting hit last night. And today he's obviously going to be on the IL. They made a deal for Dixon Machado, who is at Iowa, the Cubs shortstop. He's 30 years old, and Raynel Espinal, a 30-year-old right-hander, goes to the Cubs minor league system. But it just shows they don't have things in the minor leagues ready to stand up. They've got a few injuries at short, and they had to go out and get a guy who, you know, is basically a 200 hitter, but who can catch the ball.
Yeah, that's a state of desperation that they're in, and it kind of sums up the state of the team where they're at right now, not last year or what's coming, but right now. From everything I heard about Will Wilson, I thought he might be able to come up and play some defense, but he was ruled out. I don't know if he's hurt or he's
hamate bone.
So he's out. Okay, but anyway, so they're gonna toss him Machado, not Manny Machado, in there.
You know,
hopefully he can pick up the ball.
It's funny you said that. When I first saw on Twitter, Susan or someone had it on there, and I saw Giants trade for Machado. I said, "What?"
Yeah, Espinal. You know? Boy, they didn't give up much.
No, really. And I said, "Well," and then I started reading, and it was Dixon Machado. So we'll see. Boy, all right, we'll see. This is a big week for the Giants. You know, forgetting about the pennant race and this and that. It's a defining week for Farhan, because if he moves Jock Peterson, if he moves Rodon, if he moves Brebbia or Leon and gets people back, I think it's a big statement that he's making. So I'm anxious to see what he does.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think the fans would welcome anything that's fairly, you know, dramatic, that shakes up the mix, because I think there's a little exasperation with the team, understandably, and you know, just to do anything to shake it up, I think would be great. You know, Jock Peterson's another name. You know, right now, I don't think too many fans would be too crushed to see him go, just because he hasn't hit in a month, and he's hurt too. Unfortunately, right now that's in play, but he didn't hit in the month of July basically at all. That's a long time. Yeah. So he's not a heartbreaking loss that he might have been, you know, in May. But he can bring something. Teams all around know what he's done in the postseason with the Dodgers and the Braves. He likes the big moment, and so there's another guy between Rodon and Peterson. I'd like to think they could do some pretty significant things.
Yep, and I think the fan base is ready for it. I don't think there'll be a negative reaction. I think everyone understands the theory, understand what you said, what John wrote about, and what I've said today. So I think it's going to happen. Well, I saw a clip on Twitter this morning about Dick Allen. On this date, Bruce, he had two inside the park home runs, and they had the video online today to see against Minnesota. Burt Blyleven, I think, was pitching, but two inside the park home runs for Richie Allen. How about that?
I love watching him when he was known as Richie Allen with the Phillies. You know, it was easy to go out and watch the Giants or the Braves, you know, the Cardinals, all the great players they had. The Phillies pretty much only had him in terms of appeal. That was enough. We'd go out just to see him, to hope he'd hit like a 450-foot rocket to dead center, and he could really run. You don't get two inside the park homers without being able to run. And he got a little bit of help from Bobby Darwin. You remember him, the twin center fielder?
Sure.
He slipped to the turf on the first one, and that was all Dick Allen needed. And then on the second one, he tried to dive, and he mistimed it, and the ball got by him. Neither one of them was an error, but that's all. Dick Allen, as he became known, that's what the name he preferred, could really run. I mean, this guy was great, and the fact that it was 1972 was really significant. I've talked to people from Chicago who go back, and what he did that year, they were calling it, this is the greatest season ever by a White Sox player. They really were saying that, and they had never seen anybody with this kind of power. You know, later on, they got Frank Thomas and Albert Bell and Jim Thome, but at that point, you're talking about, you know, Gus Zernial and Banana Nose Zeke Manura and Roy Sievers. Seriously, nobody even close to Dick Allen's power. All of a sudden, here's this guy. They gave the A's a good run in the pennant race, and of course, the A's were on their way to winning their first world title, but he was a truly wonderful player, you know, got the MVP, and that one season in particular, that really defined him. Aside from the power, here he is getting two inside-the-park home runs. That's pretty amazing.
I love it. And the video is terrific if you have a chance to go online to see it.
Yeah, I will, yeah.
Yeah. Hall of Famer for sure.
Yeah.
And that is Richie Dick Allen. Absolutely. I'm glad to talk to you about it. Well, Bruce, this is going to be an interesting week of Giants baseball. I'm anxious to see what they do. I'm anxious to see how many home runs Aaron Judge hits this week. He's got 42. He's going to hit 60. He's going to hit 60. I know it. It's going to happen. He's got more home runs before August 1st than I think any other Yankee had. So we'll see what happens. But good time for baseball. Interesting week coming up. So I appreciate you being on today.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that Dodgers series work out. So I look forward to that, Marty.
A lot of fun. All right, thanks, Bruce. Talk to you next week. All right, that is the great Bruce Jenkins. Always a pleasure. Yeah, next week it's A's Giants. Next weekend the Dodgers are here for four. This is a good time for baseball, and we'll see how the Giants match up to it. All right, more coming up. Next is Ron Shelton. He's the writer-director of the movie Bull Durham. Wait till you hear this one. More coming up on the Sports Leader.